Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And welcome to another episode of Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita and Robert. It's March 30th, and we're broadcasting live from dual places, Seattle, Washington, and Burbank, California. Joining me on the helm today is Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
Good. You know, I was listening to the weather last night. It was late. It was around 11:30, 12 o'clock, and we were supposed to get some rain here in L.A., a lot of it. I walked outside this morning around 11 o'clock, and it was the bluest skies I've ever seen.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. That's like, how many jobs can you have where you can be wrong all the time and still keep your job?
Sometimes it's backwards over here in Seattle. They'll say, hey, it's going to be sunny. And then, you know, lightning strikes a church and puts a hole through the roof, and it starts raining.
Wow.
And, you know, get this. And I kind of want to throw this out there because it's kind of like one of those, you know, stories that are just so wonky that they have to be true. It was raining a lot, and the funky thing is about the Seattle area is when they say it's going to rain and have thunderstorms, you might have a thunderstorm like 2 miles away, and it'll be fine somewhere else, right? So it's not like a, you know, big wide thing. Well, out in the north end, I think it was the north end of Seattle, while people were at service, a big old lightning bolt like punched a hole right through the roof of a church, and it hit right above the pulpit.
Oh no.
And nobody was hurt. There were people in there and nobody was hurt, but wow. You know, can you imagine? And there you are, you're preaching away, and then plah, you know, bolt of lightning comes out of the blue, and like, oh man.
And
that's
the preacher had to go change his shorts.
Right. But yeah, there's a hole in the roof now. Go figure. Well,
I couldn't mention it last week because, not because I couldn't, but because I plain forgot. We had a special event at the Martial Arts History Museum last Saturday. It was Carrie Wong Day, Carrie Ogawa Wong. It got really emotional with some of her students. There was Art Camacho was there. Al Young was there. James Liu came by. Pretty small crowd, maybe about 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good time. Really enjoyed it. I hadn't seen James
Very
in a long
cool.
time. I'm trying to get him to do the show. Al Young, I didn't realize that stroke had such an effect on him, so he's moving, but not like he used to. I
haven't, wow.
In fact, last time I saw him was one of the Dragon Fests was the last time I saw him.
Yeah, that was some years ago. Because when did it stop? I think Dragon Fest initially stopped like in 2009 or 2008 or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. And I think I saw him in like between 2004 and 2006.
Yeah. My goodness. That was weird. It sounded like you were walking.
It's kind of hot in my room. So I was sort of fanning myself with a pillow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's weird because, like, the air hits your mic and we can hear it. It sounds like...
Oh, great. This show turned into an obscene phone call.
You did. All right.
Oh, I'm convinced you cannot go away anymore. Every time you go away, something happens. Last week was not my fault. We dropped both the calls. You listened to the show. You ended up spitting toothpaste all over your mirror in the bathroom because we did something really funny. Wayne said something really funny, and see, with him it would be an accident.
Yeah,
and he was apologetic. With me, if I would have said something like that, it would sure in the hell would have been on purpose.
Yeah. And, you know, in case Wayne, Sensei Wayne, if you're listening, no offense taken. We love having fun on this show, and it was funny. It was genuinely funny, and it was so funny I spit toothpaste all over my bathroom mirror. It was awesome. But, you know, of all the luck, you know, whenever I'm, like, not able to do a show, why does the Blog Talk Radio server, whatever, got to drop calls? It's like, of all the luck, I don't get it.
Yeah, but we dropped calls. We haven't been able to get a hold of guests. One guest blew us off completely. But at least that was the one bit time you could call in. Last week, you had no time to even call in. And then there was the one with Don Wilson during the Super Bowl where he wasn't picking up his phone, and I was freaking out. Yeah. I love those times.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why it's always great to have a co-host. So for anyone out there that wants their own Blog Talk Radio show, we're still looking for people that want to join the network. But it's always great to have a co-host in case, you know, weird stuff like that happens where call drops or you can't get a hold of someone because, you know, sometimes people just plain forget or they get the time zones wrong or whatever. It's always great to have a co-host to chat with and talk about other stuff with in those instances. And this is why I love Bob as my co-host, one of the greatest co-hosts. And I've had, while I was doing actual radio and online radio, you know, you're the funnest, man. So love you lots. You're the funnest. Okay, so our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Stay tuned because later on we're going to be discussing a few of the lesser-known martial arts in the world. Now, we've all heard of karate. Everyone's heard of taekwondo and kung fu and stuff like that, and MMA. But there are arts out there that even I was surprised existed because I'd never heard of them before. So we'll discuss those a little bit later after our first segment. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and go into birthdays and shout-outs. What birthdays do you have on your end there, Sifu Bob?
Well, I've got actually a few mutual friends of ours.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Harmon, his birthday is today, and he asked yesterday, he emailed me and asked if we'll have him, he would like to do our show. Maybe I can contact him for next week's show.
That would be Sifu, awesome.
That would be so cool. I would love to have him on. I don't think he's in a real weird time zone either. I think he's in, like, Colorado, so it's, like, 1 hour ahead, so it's not too bad.
Oh, okay. Cool.
We've got Sifu Mike Mathers. His birthday is also today.
Yay!
We've got my oldest daughter in Vegas, Tierra Palmer.
Woo!
I don't know what's happening with her because I wrote Tierra King because that's her married name, and she commented that's Tierra Palmer, so I have a feeling something's happening with her and her husband. And you know what? You heard this story last year, but it was really funny when she married this guy and it was in Vegas. His name's Ty King, and I said, "Don't tell me you're related to Lisa King." Our ambassador for the Masters Hall of Fame out of Vegas. Elder Grandmaster, I believe he's Kempo, Stephen Spry. He was the originator of the Masters Hall of Fame in 1999.
Woohoo, happy birthday.
Also on the first. Oh, yeah, absolutely. A mutual friend of ours that we saw up at the USCMAS 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Miller. His birthday is on the 2nd. A friend of a friend, I met him once when they did some Wei Chi Ru videos, Don Joyner, which is out of Florida. His birthday is on the 2nd. A mutual friend of ours that's taken us to breakfast, and you were hosting him up in, not hosting, but you took him around Seattle, and him and his daughter went up there. Michael Vera from Lima Lama, his birthday is on the 3rd.
Right
that is
on.
It, my birthday.
Yay, and I don't have any because we share so many friends, so we pretty much covered it. So for everyone out there that's having a birthday this week, happy birthday. Here's a tune for you.
Aha! Here we go!
this week, the week of the 30th through April 5th. All right. So let's get on with our shout-outs. And since you
have you seen the new Taco Bell commercials?
No. Did they get a new character?
Taco Bell is taking a pseudo shot at McDonald's.
Really?
Because, yes, it's the weirdest thing. They're introducing this new Crunchwrap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found all over the country, but mostly on the East Coast, a bunch of guys named Ronald McDonald. So they've got a Ronald McDonald, several of them, eating their food on TV, on commercials.
That's ingenious.
it is absolutely ingenious because they're not taking a shot at them.
Yeah, that's ingenious. Oh, my God. Way to go, Taco Bell. Oh, that's awesome. That is cool. All right, let's go into shout-outs. And since you do so well announcing the Dragon Fest event coming up real soon, if we could have you tell our listeners again about Dragon Fest, that would be awesome.
And let me tell listeners one thing. It's not that I do such a fabulous job on announcing Dragon Fest. It's that Sifu Rusty doesn't happen to have the window open on her browser. Or else she'd probably be doing them. So, like I said, the Dragon Fest is going to be separated into sections. They're going to have the history section. And what the history section is anybody who's really had an impact on the martial arts. Then they're going to have an author section, people who've written books. They're going to have a film section of actors, stunt guys, producers, that sort of thing. They're going to have an arts and crafts section, a special effects section where they're actually going to have movie monsters, and they're going to have a whole special effects a whole area dedicated to special effects. And then they're going to have a martial arts vendors section. So this is going to be broken up into 6 separate sections in this banquet room where we had the Honor Society Awards this year in September, or last year now. So the history section will include Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, James Hong, Art Camacho Takabota, Terry Ogawa Wong, Richard Norton, Peter Kwong, Bill Riyasaki, Eric Lee, Rodney Kageyama, and Gerald Okamura, the originator of the original Dragon Fest. The author section will include Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny DeJet Urquidez, Peter Cunningham, Simon Ree, Lambert Chung, Saul Kalawilau. God, I always mess up his name.
That was pretty good.
You think I'd get better at it? It's just getting worse.
Pretty good.
Don Baird, John Crane, Steve Sexton, and Myriad Publications. The film section will include Fumio Demura, Shin Koyamada, Donnie Wilson, Gorilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Gaskoff from The Gathering, The Stunt People, CNC Movie Factory, Showviz, LLC. The arts and crafts section will have Paul Wee from The Simpsons, Mel's Props, the artistry of Ed Parker. Oh, by the way, Ed Parker, this year for the Masters, all of the certificates that the inductees will be getting will be Ed Parker originals. That will be part of his certificate program.
That's so cool. And we'll announce that after Dragon Fest, because I think that'll be cool.
Exactly. I finished that. My Scent Image, Justin Wagle Martial Arts Strategy Game, Hollis Jewelry, 2K Customs, Tradition Shirts, Jerome Liu's Hyperactive Monkey Book. The special effects section will include Neil Nguyen, Eric Villavega, Christopher Hernandez, Neil Kinnamore, Norman Myers, Calvin Lowe, Amber Koronsky, I hope the S is silent, Alfred Perez, Kojo Omura, George Gasper, Jason Krager, Rick Czar, Scotty Fields, Bruce Mitchell, and Hiroshi Kid Gary, the martial arts vendors, which this is actually, you know, the martial arts vendors is actually one of the smallest sections.
Huh.
Yeah, it is.
That's too bad.
So strange. That's going to include Sidekick Publications, Dynamic Dojo Radio, Valley Martial Arts Supplies, Steel Combat Instruments, Pacific Association of Women in the Martial Arts, PAMA, Worldwide Martial Arts Council, United Martial Arts for Christ, Filipino Arts with Felix Roles, and the Masters Hall of Fame. And that is who is going to be at Dragon Fest 2014 in Burbank at the Burbank Holiday Inn in beautiful downtown Burbank, which was made famous by Rowan and Martin Laffin in the 60s. And it will be May 8th from 1 to 7 p.m.
Right on. And the tickets are $25, correct?
That's correct. They're $25 either online or at the door. If you buy them early, you do get preferential treatment to get in to the event. They will let all the pre-sale tickets go in first.
Cool.
So, and you can get your tickets, just go to museumdragonfest.com, and it will say, let me get back to that window, I believe it says, yes, it does. In one of the headers, it says purchase tickets, and you can go on
Very
there
cool.
and buy your tickets. Be all set. The deadline is going to be, I believe Michael told me the Friday before Dragon Fest because he has to email you the tickets. So it can't be the day of because he'll be down at the hotel preparing.
Very cool. So hear that, listeners. Get your tickets. The Dragon Fest back in the day was the largest martial arts entertainment and industry convention in the United States, hosted by Master Gerald Okamura. And it went by the wayside for about 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and it's back. So, and Michael Matsuda is bound and determined to make this as big as it was. So help make it as big as it was, and get your tickets now. All right. Now, speaking of, since you said Masters Hall of Fame, I'll go ahead and announce the Masters Hall of Fame events for this year. There's two of them this year. There's going to be one in Fort Worth, Texas, and in Long Beach, California. Now, the Masters Hall of Fame event in Fort Worth, Texas. I couldn't even say Fort Worth. I almost said Fort Worth. Fort Worth, Texas is going to be June 7th, 2014. And this is going to be a benefit for Spark Worldwide. And the keynote speakers there at the Fort Worth event will be Don the Dragon Wilson and Art Camacho, June 7th. And if you want any more information about these events, just go to mastershalloffame.org. And the more local one to me is the one in Long Beach, California. And this is going to be held August 1st, and this is going to be held in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the Long Beach Internationals. And for those of you that have been around a long time, you know what the Long Beach Nationals is. It's one of the oldest and most prolific tournaments in the United States today. And the Masters Hall of Fame in Long Beach will be, like I said, August 1st, and I'm not quite sure where the venue is. Has that been posted already, Sifu Bob?
No, that hasn't. It is going to be in a hotel. A few years ago when it was held in conjunction with the Internationals, it was actually in the Convention Center. But the Internationals are no longer held in the Long Beach Convention Center. It had been held there for over 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
So awesome. No, it hasn't, but it is going to be in a local hotel.
Okay. Awesome. Well, go ahead and get to mastershalloffame.org if you want to order tickets. And as always, alumni are always invited back every year. Even people that just want to attend with their teachers that are coming as alumni. Also, if you have someone that you would like to nominate for the Masters Hall of Fame, get a hold of either me or Sifu Bob on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, or you can email one of us at dynamicdojoradiohost@gmail.com, or dynamicdojoradiocohost@gmail.com. So, yeah, just if you have anyone that you want to nominate for Masters Hall of Fame, go ahead and do so.
I have to interrupt that
okay.
the speaker, because you announced who it was for Texas. Being
oh,
that we're,
I didn't do
we're,
that for, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
You didn't do that for Long Beach, but because we're in conjunction with the Long Beach Internationals, our guest speaker will be Ed Parker Jr.
Yes, that's going to be awesome. And
Master Ken from the Enter the Dojo YouTube videos will be there as a guest.
Woohoo!
As well. Oh, and remember, we are having, I forgot to mention, we are having a special guest that I am sworn to secrecy for the Dragon Fest event.
And yes.
once they open that up, I'll announce who it is.
Awesome. Yeah. So Masters Hall of Fame and Dragon Fest. Get your tickets now. Awesome. All right. We're going to go just a little more local on my end of town. I want to just do a couple of tournaments. So for any Puget Sounders out there that may be listening, we've got two tournaments coming up that I know of. If you have any more, please post it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. May 3rd is the 41st annual Shorinru Open Karate Championships. Along with the Butokukan Open, it's one of the oldest tournaments here in Washington State. May 3rd, it's going to be held at Mill Creek Middle School, 620 North Central Avenue, Kent, Washington, 98031. And it's right down the hill for me, so I can actually wake up late and just go down the hill. It'll be great. if you have any questions about the tournament or if you would like to have some registration forms sent to you, go ahead and call 253-520-2516, and you'll be speaking to either Kyoshi Jerry Gould or Shihan Diane Gould, or you can email gouldkarate@aol.com, and that's Gould, G-O-U-L-D, gouldkarate@aol.com. And we have another tournament coming up in June, actually, and this is an NBL-sanctioned event, and it's going to be held at Pierce College in Lakewood, Washington, June 28th, 2014, this is the New World Martial Arts Classic, and this, again, is an NBL, National Black Belt League, sanctioned tournament for the Evergreen Regional Conference, and it's being hosted by Master Jay Williams. So I tried to post it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, and I don't know if it showed up because there was something about the permissions, but I'll make sure that that info gets on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Yay! And let's see. I have one shout-out, and then we can go to your shout-outs. I want to do a shout-out to Sifu Douglas Wong, a fan and a regular listener of our show. His son Travis has a documentary out called Stunt Sport, and it's all about breaking, tricking, and parkour, and it's airing on Fox International. And there's a cool trailer of this documentary on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So go ahead and scroll down a little bit, look for Sifu Douglas Wong, and you'll find his post about his son Travis's documentary Stunt Sport. Right on. Yay, Travis. All right. You have any shout-outs, Sifu Bob?
No, we pretty much covered it.
Okay, cool. Well, I guess let's move on to are we at health news already? We are at health news already. All right. Now, listeners out there, have you guys all heard of Naked Juice?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Naked Juice. I was waiting for the joke though when you said absolutely. Okay. Now, Naked Juice is touted as being a healthy organic type of drink. However, there is a class action lawsuit against the Naked Juice makers. And here's the story on that. Okay. Last week, the makers of Naked Juice agreed to settle a very important class action lawsuit, which accused the company of deceptive labeling. Now, the basis behind this lawsuit stems from the company's use of the words, quote unquote, all natural on products that contained Archer Daniels Midland's Fibersol 2. And Fibersol 2 is a soluble corn fiber, and it acts as like a bulking agent, but it's low calorie. It also contains, I don't even know if I can say this right, fructooligosaccharides, which is an alternative sweetener, and other artificial ingredients such as calcium pantothenate, which is synthetically produced from, get this, formaldehyde. And I know, right? And genetically modified soy. So Naked Juice carries these substances in their products, yet still uses the words all natural on their labeling. Now, since these ingredients are either genetically engineered or synthetic and really aren't produced in nature, it's considered extremely misleading as far as consumers think, because, you know, for these juices to claim all natural, wouldn't you think that they would just have, oh, I don't know, juice?
Well, that would make sense. Plus, they're called Naked Juice. You don't get any more natural than that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, juice, pasteurize it, there you go. You know, another thing about these labels is that it says no sugar added. But it's got these fructooligosaccharides in it, which are not really, which isn't sugar, it's alternative, but it's probably synthetic. So when they say no sugar added, they're not lying, but it's still pretty deceptive. Now, as part of the settlement, Naked Juice, which is a subsidiary of PepsiCo, has agreed to remove, it has agreed to remove the label All Natural from all its juices and pay a $9 million settlement to the class action group. Now, according to the consumers, this is a big win and is a huge step forward for more accurate labeling here in the United States. It also puts other food manufacturers on serious notice that GMOs are anything but natural and cannot be marketed as such. As one digs deeper into the fine details of this lawsuit settlement, there are some extremely troubling details of which the general public is completely unaware. Now, the details they don't want you to know about. Now, the lawyers representing four of the five plaintiffs who negotiated and signed off on the settlement agreed to a provision which said that they would not freely communicate with the press in order to publicize the case. Any communication would have to contain language that was agreed upon in the settlement or would need prior approval from Naked Juice. Now, if lawyers who are supposed to represent the interests of the class action group cannot freely talk to the press about the settlement and cannot have complete freedom to spread information about how consumers can make a claim for $9 million, it begs the question, whose interests are the plaintiff's lawyers truly representing? As it stands now, the only way consumers will be informed about the details of the settlement is if they were to somehow read an announcement in one of the following media outlets. Let's see here. The publishing schedule of this class action suit announcement once in the West Coast and Northeast regional editions of Parade magazine, twice in People magazine, or four times in USA Today, but only for California. So, yeah, pretty wild. Now, the full story is a bit longer, so I'm not going to read the rest of it, but I will post it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page so that y'all can read more about it. So it just, if anything, this just means, you know, really just read the labels on your food and drink, folks. And if you can't pronounce it, then don't eat it.
You know, it was just so funny. Well, there's a couple things that were funny about that. One, $9 million will be paid to the class action.
Mm-hmm.
They, PepsiCo, that's probably doesn't even touch what the yearly bonus that their CEO gets.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know, that's what I thought too. You know, I mean, I remember years ago I got notice of a class action suit, and it had something to do with, it had something to do with a part on my motorcycle that could have gone awry or something like that, and the recall notice came out a little bit late, and this and that and the other. So anyway, I got this notice, and you know, the only thing that was on this class action suit was that you could get something anywhere between like $5 to $150, and the part replaced for free, or you can just get the part replaced for free. Well, that doesn't really take into consideration that the people whose parts already went wonky, and this was like a fuel related part. So, you know, if it had like broken or something like that and a spark hit it, poof, you know, your bike gets set on fire on the highway or something, or it could have really like caused an accident. So this really didn't take into consideration anyone who's already had this part go awry on them and mess them up on the freeway, you know? So I really thought it was kind of weird about, you know, class action suits and stuff like that. It's just weird. But, you know, if the consumers in this particular case, you know, do get their money's worth or whatever, and Naked Juice is agreeing to take the all natural thing off of their labels, then cool, all the power to them and stuff like that. But just read your labels.
You said something funny. I found very funny. You said you were going to post it, which you did. You posted the story online, and you said so you all can read it. So y'all can read it. What was that accent from? Southern Philippines?
I guess it was a throwback from Fort Worth, Texas. I got Masters Hall of Fame on the brain from Fort Worth, Texas. All right, well, let's get on to our weird news. What do we got?
Well, when emergency dispatcher in Nebraska's Sarpy County picked up a recent call, all they heard were the sounds of breathing and scratching. Dispatchers became worried until they learned the noises were coming from a dog who dialed 911.
Yeah.
That dog was hungry and wanted food now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sarpy County 911 Assistant Director Marilyn Gable tells Omaha television station KETV that it's the first time a dog has ever called the emergency center. The dog's owner, Melissa Acosta, says she thought her 2-pound Japanese Shih, Sophie, was trying to curl up next to her on the couch when she realized Sophie was scratching at Acosta's smartphone with her paw. Then Acosta heard a voice from the phone asking for an address of the emergency. Acosta says the whole thing is a little embarrassing. Sophie, of course, had no comment.
So, okay.
You know, which is really funny, they're asking for an address, but the address automatically comes up when you dial 911.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that works on cell phones, though.
Oh, no, that's true, because 911 on a cell phone, at least in California, and maybe I'm sure in almost every state, goes to the highway patrol.
Oh, okay. Cool. And then I guess they would have to, like, do their ping thing or something like that to find where you are, I would guess. I don't know.
Right.
I never understood how that works about, you know, what happens if you call 911 from a cell phone? How do they find you? Do they get an address, or do they get the address that your number is addressed to, which wouldn't help me if I was, you know, like in Seattle and they get my Kent address or something like that. So
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They might have to go by pinging the nearby cell towers and, you know, digging into your GPS or something. That's That's interesting. But, yeah, you know, and that's one reason why I tend to keep my GPS on if I'm going into Metro Seattle. I keep my GPS on in case they do have to ping and find me, like if I just, like, get hit by a bus or something like that, right? You know, and or if I don't know, pass out and crash into something and no one finds me, I hope that they do, like, ping my phone and find me that way. All right.
And as tiny as you are, if you ever got hit by a bus, there wouldn't be enough left of you to find.
No, no. And in fact, if I were lucky, I'd probably be able to just crouch down and go between the wheels. But no, if I got hit by a bus, I'd be like in little pieces everywhere. So don't even bother cremating me. You ain't going to find me.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
What else do we got?
Well, you know, I've been running out of weird laws because I've done all the states, a couple of them multiple times. I've done African laws, Europe laws, UK, China, Japan. I've been all over the world with weird laws. So now I went onto the TMZ or my TMZ app on my phone. So I'm going to do some entertainment news from now because those are constantly changing and you'll never run out.
Woo!
This is interesting. Bill Murray, I guess, owns a bar or a nightclub in Florida called, what else? Caddyshack.
Awesome.
That is so cool. There, it starts out, Bill Murray, House of Badass, cover songs.
Sweet.
There is a house in Florida, the way they say, you know how some of these are just worded poorly, you're going like, what are they really trying to say? I think they're trying to say Bill Murray has a house in Florida, and when he's there, he loves singing cover songs.
Oh, you know
the
what
comedian,
I think they did? I think they tried to make the first sentence sound like House of the Rising Sun. There is a house in Florida.
Oh, yes.
And when
okay.
he's there, yeah, okay.
Yeah, don't quit your day job.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I don't sing karaoke unless I have a few beers. Ever. In public, I always make like I can't sing.
The comic legend took the stage Friday night in St. Augustine at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant and performed a rousing set of songs, including Gloria by Van Morrison, House of the Rising Sun by the Animals. We're told Murray jammed out for about 45 minutes. And in the video, the crowd was clearly stoked. And, of course, TMZ has a video on this online.
I'm going to have to look for that.
I would go on TMZ website, and it's right there. Bill,
sweet.
It says, Bill's no Eric Burdon, but he's pretty damn good.
Cool. Well, I'll have to go check that out. TMZ, huh? Okay.
Yep.
I'll have to go check that out after the show. That's awesome. Very cool. Yay.
And you have a shout-out right below that in entertainment news.
Yeah, I do. I just want to put a shout-out to, and I just found out about this. It's one of James Liu's newer movies. It was, I don't remember if it was released or filmed. No, I take that back. It was filmed in 2011, released just last year, and it's called Tengu. Starring James Liu, Mark Grove, Louis Mandylor, and Sarah Salazar. Now, for anyone out there that's unfamiliar, Tengu is a Japanese term for a type of demon, but not necessarily like a demon like we would think, you know, from hell and devil and stuff like that. They're just like little imp demons, that kind of thing. But anyway, the movie plot is that in 15th century Japan, Asura is given a magical sword by a half-human, half-crow creature known as a tengu. And this is kind of, you know, the traditional way that tengus are portrayed is that they walk like humans, but they have a head of a crow. Okay, this sword bestowed the gift of immortality, but it also came with a price. Asura was now honor-bound to become a protector of our world, guarding it against the forces of darkness. Throughout time, Asura has fulfilled his duty without question, but now a new threat arises. The sorcerer, Tanaro, who killed his master centuries earlier in feudal Japan, and has risen from beyond the grave to fulfill his mission to summon powerful evil upon the earth. His soul inhabiting a metropolitan police officer, Tanaro reunites with a modern version of his ancient cult to recover powerful artifacts that will enable him to open a gateway between our realm and that of a malevolent evil known as Akuma. Along with his apprentices, Kotori and Domino, and police detective Drake, Asura must stop Tanaro and his minions from completing the ritual that will unleash hell on earth. And I really don't have that cool voice like the regular guy that does voiceovers for movie trailers. I forgot his name, but he's got that voice that everyone recognizes. But now that needs that guy's voice. So anyway, it's called Tengu. And go check it out. I don't know if it's on Netflix or Redbox or anything like that, but go look it up. Go check it out. I definitely want to see it. I mean, it sounds kind of cool. It kind of sounds sort of like a Highlander type of a
yeah, it
a
does.
Plot,
absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
You know, I was talking to James. Now, James, he thought it was fun because he used to actually, when IKF or Unique Publications were doing their video series, he used to run second camera. He used to run the mm-hmm. B camera for him, which was mm-hmm. really interesting considering he'd been in movies for like 30 years, right?
Yeah.
And I asked him one time, he shaved his head, not shaved it like Eric Lee or anything, but he cut it. And I said, why did you cut it? And he told me he was being stereotyped. He was a stereotypical Chinese mob guy. So mm-hmm. he cut his hair to get more mainstream. And now mm-hmm. his hair is like really, really short.
Yeah,
it's like
for the film,
really almost
it's completely gone. Yeah, for the film,
so
Tengu,
it's
completely
back.
Gone.
Got it.
Yeah, I think it was growing back when you talked to him last, because it was completely, he was completely clean-shaven on his head for the movie, and he's got a mustache and a goatee. I mean, and he's wearing a trench coat, so it kind of does kind of look like a Highlander-type thing, but, you know, if it's got James Liu in it, and it's got, like, Japanese swords in it, I'm going to watch it.
Well,
you
yeah,
know?
And last time I talked to James a couple of years ago, it was really funny. It was during when Brad Pitt was still married to Jennifer Aniston, and mm-hmm. he would tell me about being at Brad's house because James' job was to teach Brad sword for one of his movies.
Oh, uh-huh.
And
oh,
that,
cool.
that must have been really cool to be around that kind of stuff. James was
yeah.
a great guy. Like I said, I'm trying to get him on the show.
That would be
I have
cool.
emailed him. I talked to him face to face last Saturday about it. So hopefully, and now what he told me is he's not around a lot because most of his gigs right now are at least out of state.
Yeah.
He says there's not a lot going on in LA anymore because, you know, California, we've got high taxes, and all the other states are trying to entice the movie industry to go there instead. Now, I do have a couple things to share with you that I saw posted. This really hit home. It says no matter how big your bank account, no matter how big your house is, your how recent your car is, or how big your bank account is, our graves will be the same size. Stay humble.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I love that.
That is such a cool thing. Then there was one. It was sort of a diss on William Shatner. It says, I think we should invent a game called Shatner where someone yells Shatner at you and then whatever you're doing, you overact what you're doing.
Spock.
I know. And then this one our buddy Craig Carter posted because, you know, I'm turning 50 in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And this one hit home. It says, at my age, getting lucky means walking into a room and remembering what I came in for.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I do hope you're going to at least celebrate for a week, because I know that's what I'm going to do when I turn 50. I'm going to celebrate for a week. I'm going to do, like, all sorts of nerdy stuff, and I'm going to drag all my friends to it. It's
Well, I'm going to be sick for a week. I'm going to be lit for a week.
Yeah, you know, I want to go roller skating for mine, and, you know, I wish I had the money to just come down and celebrate your birthday with you, but I'm already going to be there in May anyway, so.
and August. You've probably been in California more in the last couple years than you have been your entire life.
You're right, I have. I mean, you know, since my sister moved down there, and since Masters Hall of Fame down there, and a lot of the Palma stuff, and yeah, you know, I've been down there more times in just 2 years than I have, you know, when was the first time I went down to California? I think I was 6, but even then, you know, we didn't stay very long. And yeah, it's great though, you know. I'm just wishing for my Alaska miles to rack up so I can get a free trip somewhere. All righty. Well, why don't we do this? Let's go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, I know we're running a little late, but for the next hour, we're going to talk about lesser-known martial arts. So for anyone out there listening, if you have lesser-known martial arts out there that you want to share information on, give us a call, 347-677-0699, or you can catch us on the Blog Talk Radio Show Marquee. So if you're finding this post on Facebook, click the link. You'll get to the marquee. Scroll down a little bit. You'll hit a chat board. Type in your lesser known martial art there. So we'll be right back after this. Baby,
hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer: whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. This is Dynamic Dojo with Rashida and Robert, broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington, and Burbank, California, on Blog Talk Radio through the Seika Network. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, and we are going to be talking about lesser-known martial arts. So martial arts that aren't necessarily household words. Okay, now even before I got into martial arts, I knew the word karate. I knew the word kung fu. What about you, Bob? Before you got into martial arts, you know, karate, kung fu, taekwondo, those were household words.
They were. There was, well, you know, when we were growing up, because you're in your 40s, I'm almost in my 50s, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, taekwondo was on every corner. Karate wasn't even that well done out here. There were almost no kung fu schools. The only reason you do kung fu is because of Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There was, you know, Ed Parker's Kempo was out here. He made that a household word. But nothing was as big as Taekwondo and still isn't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I don't want to do Kung Fu because of the old Kung Fu TV series with David Carradine. But I didn't know that there was a Kung Fu school right in Chinatown, which was only like 10 minutes away from my house. So, you know, my parents got me into karate. And, you know, when you're a kid and you first get into karate, you know, you get like the same thing. Karate, Kung Fu, it's the same thing, you know. Heck, you know, I knew kids in elementary school that thought just because they watched a Kung Fu movie that they knew Kung Fu.
Right, right.
I know Kung Fu. Okay, yeah, okay. You know, no one messed with that kid that said, I know Kung Fu, just watched Kung Fu Theater all day. But anyway, you know, those were household words. However, there are lesser-known arts out there from other countries. A lot of people have the stereotype that martial arts only comes from Asia. And although Asia had made martial arts popular, I kind of am of the school of thought that if any culture or country or ethnic group or what have you has ever gone to war or has ever been at war within their communities or countries or ethnic groups or whatever, then they have a martial art. It's just a matter of knowing what they are. So I just went and got just a few lesser-known martial arts, and we're just going to go ahead and talk about them for a little bit. And I implore all of our listeners out there, if you have any rare martial arts that you've heard of or would like to share, give us a call, 347-677-0699. Okay, so here's one. Turtle Kung Fu. Now,
you know, that's really interesting. I think, did you ever see that movie with Dana Carvey called Master of Disguise?
No.
He dressed up like a turtle and took on the attributes of a turtle. It was actually really funny. Now, I want to hear about this one, though, because, you know, we've got monkey, praying mantis. I want to hear about turtle.
Okay. Now, the turtle is one of 12 animals of Xing Yi Quan. Xing Yi Quan is considered to be one of the three treasures of internal martial arts in China. There's Tai Chi, Bagua Zhang, and Xing Yi Quan, okay? And, you know, I had always known that Xing Yi Quan worked off of the 12 animals, like, you know, there's the dragon and stuff. And, you know, when I initially started learning Xing Yi, I learned a form called the basic linking fist, and it had the attributes of all 12 animals. But I never got to learn, you know, each animal form in its entirety. But the turtle is one of them, depending on the style, okay? The motion of the turtle actually looks like the cloud hands motion of Tai Chi. So if you imagine kind of like, you know, wax on, wax off, but with each hand sequentially, so one hand going outward and the other hand going, like, downward and inward, and then you switch. Mm-hmm. So you're doing, like, these outward, you know, outward circles and stuff. That's kind of what the motion looks like with a stance footwork that's called, that we tend to call, like, a shuffle step or a short stealing step. Some people call it the T-step or an inside empty stance. And it looks almost exactly like cloud hands of Tai Chi. And it looks a lot different than a lot of the usual Xing Yi stances, which is kind of like a boxer's forward advancing box step. Mm. That's the main movement behind Xing Yi stance. Now, usually the 12 animals in most of the styles include eagle, bear, snake, tiger, dragon, chicken, horse, swallow, sparrowhawk, and monkey. Now, notice that turtle isn't even, like, mentioned in there. However, depending on the style or the family, that that practices a particular method of Xingyi, other animals are included, such as turtle, or I should not included, but substituted, turtle, crocodile, tai, which is a bird, crane, and ostrich. And, you know, I'm going to post a video of all of these rare martial arts that I dug up yesterday. I was like on the net for like 4 hours just looking up stuff and learning about stuff. It was pretty cool. But, when you watch the turtle kung fu movement, it's actually pretty cool. It's pretty beautiful. But if you pair that with, the usual Xingyi pounding fists and drilling fists and cannon fists and stuff like that, then it can be pretty, pretty devastating. So turtle kung fu, pretty cool. Now, I'm pretty sure that if I did post something like this up on Facebook or Google Plus or whatever, that, you know, people would probably start joking about it. Like, well, what do? Do you hide behind your fists? Do you stick your head out and then put them back behind the fist? What do? Do you have to move slow? You know?
But, well, you know, I can see your point, because, you know, all these other arts that are within the animal system, the bear, the snake, the eagle, they have attributes of those animals within the art.
Mm-hmm. Yep. With the turtle.
I'm curious, what attributes could that possibly have?
The swimming motion that the turtle has. If you watch a turtle, they don't really flap their flippers up and down. They kind of do like a forward backward type of thing. How do I explain it? It's almost like a sequential, like a butterfly stroke in swimming. But, you know, a lot smaller. So I guess if you can imagine that, you know, if you take your hands and bring them palm forward, like through the water, and then just as you're making the downward stroke to turn the palms down, and then as their hands go down to fully turn them backwards. So their flippers do this like undulating thing. And the cloud hand type of motion that you'll see in the video when I post it is supposed to imitate that swimming motion of the turtle. So, but on land, on land they're pretty slow and lumbersome. But it's kind of like penguins, you know. You see a penguin, you see them like waddling around, and you think, my God, that looks stupid. But you see them in the water, and they're like really nimble. It's kind of like that. Primarily just to imitate the movements of the flippers.
You know, if that's the case, I could see turtle. I'd have to look at it, but I could see them using a lot of trapping as they turn their flipper over. They're doing like a lopsow from Wing Chun, or they could pox out from the other side. I'd be really curious.
Yeah, I would probably suggest to listeners out there, and for anyone that's curious about it, to go on YouTube and look up turtle kung fu. Now, there are a few videos of older people doing method of Xingyi, which I guess is a little more involved than just one form. I guess there's like a whole subsystem based around it. I could be wrong, but that's kind of what I gathered from the research I did yesterday, is that there's a whole system behind it, and that there's only like maybe two or three elderly people that have actually mastered it. No, I take that back. I'm getting that mixed up with the duck. So we'll get into duck later. But anyway, but there aren't very many people that do Xingyi, period, you know, in comparison to, like, let's say karate or tai chi, right? Although, you know, it's very popular in parts of China. But, you know, a lot of times if you go around and say, I do Xingyi, they're going to go, what the hell is that? you know, if you say Tai Chi, people have heard of Tai Chi. More and more people are now hearing more about Bagua. But you say Xing Yi, a lot of people go, what? What's that? And then you look at it and you think that's an internal art? Because it's got some, you know, pretty, you know, strong footwork and just really quick drilling motions. And you'd be thinking, whoa, this is crazy. This looks like, you know, Silat or Kuntao or something like that. But, yeah, it's an internal art. But get on YouTube, look at those, and also look up Xing Yi Quan, because Xing Yi Quan, with its fist concepts, do have a lot of trapping and a lot of simultaneous check hit or block hit, a lot of intercepting, and a lot of circling around to take people down, like Bagua. It's a really cool art, and I really wished I could have delved more into it than I did. But, yeah, check out Xing Yi Quan and Turtle. It's pretty cool, and I'll post all of these in its entirety on our Facebook page. So anyway, that's Turtle Kung Fu. All right. Let's see. What's the next one that we wanted to talk about? Oh, Kridoli. Kridoli is a European art from the country of Georgia. It's a Georgian warrior art. Now, the thing is, though, is that it's not necessarily rare when it comes to that part of the world, because that's what they practice. But it's rare in terms of, you know, how many people have heard of it, because it's not a household name like karate is, right? Now,
right.
There's only one gentleman that's credited for teaching it here in the USA, in New York, as a matter of fact. And his name is Nico Abrazadze. And I really want to see about getting him on the show. I'll have to, like, see if he's on Facebook or something. Now, Nico has been taught by the last three remaining masters of Kridoli. And all of these masters were all in their 90s. And Nico Abrazadze has a few videos out. I think the video that I posted of Kridoli was about Krivi, which is the Georgian boxing. And if you look at this video, in fact, I'm going to post it up now, Bob, so maybe if your internet is strong enough to do it, maybe you can watch it while, I don't know how that'll work, maybe you could watch it while we're talking, because this stuff looks a lot like Filipino martial arts, like Filipino pangamut, Filipino panantuka, knees and elbows, and a lot of trapping. It uses a lot of rhythm. You'll see Nico, if this is the same video I'm thinking of, you'll see Nico drumming a beat on his chest. It's a very rhythmical beat, and then he applies it on some guy and completely destroys his arm with gunting-like movements and, you know, takes him down and just multiple hits. It's great stuff. In fact, let me go ahead and post this real quick, just because I want I want the listeners and any of my students to also check this out too, because I think it's pretty cool. Let's see here. Let me get to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page here. And again, for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. We're talking about rare martial arts. If you have any to share, please share them with us. Give us a call. Let me go ahead and post this here real quick. Come on, paste already. Oh, this is the right one. So it's called Krivi, Kridoli Krivi, Georgian boxing with Nico Abrazadze in the Bronx. He teaches in the Bronx. It's pretty cool. So yeah, check that out, Bob, and see what you think. It's pretty cool. A lot of, gunting type stuff. I mean, if they weren't wearing traditional Georgian dress, and there was no text accompanying the video, you would assume it was something, you know, Filipino or any other martial art. You know, I'm assuming that any other martial artist would be able to see their own art in it. It's pretty cool. So anyway, I put that up on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. And there are other videos about Kridoli. It involves weaponry. It involves throwing, punching, kicking, swords, sword and shield, staves, spears, the whole nine yards. It's as much a complete martial art as, you know, kung fu or karate or taekwondo. It's pretty cool, and it's really cool to learn and hear about all of these arts from places other than Asia. You know, it's pretty cool. Okay, let's move on from Kridoli. There's a southern style of kung fu called Tai Hui, and its nickname is Six Elbows. And this is also an internal style of kung fu, which emphasizes efficiency and centrifugal movement over hard force. And again, I'm going to post all these videos in a big post later on. But, you know, if you look at Tai Hui, and again, if there was no text accompanying the video, you would assume that it was Wing Chun. You would assume, because a lot of the motions are very similar. Now, there's enough to Tai Hui that's different from Wing Chun, so that way, you know, people can differentiate. But as far as first glance, you know, some people would go, oh, that kind of looks like Wing Chun. It's, you know, that's weird, but it's Tai Hui. And let's see, I'm trying to see how many people know it. I think that there is actually a Tai Hui following, like in Hong Kong. I might be getting this wrong. I'm getting all my stuff mixed up, but I think that there is a following, like around Hong Kong in China and in some places here in the United States, but you don't hear about it as much as, like, let's say Hungar Kung Fu or Wing Chun Kung Fu or Choi Lei Fut Kung Fu, you know? So I think that's really cool. So anyway, I'll post that later on our page. Let's see here. Oh,
so
here we go.
By the way, I did watch that video. I put my mic on mute so I wouldn't disturb anybody. And I can see a lot of arts in it. I can see Kali, Tenjak, Kenpo.
Yeah.
Because Kenpo uses a lot of slapping.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was beating on his chest, you know, to create a rhythm. You know, I'm a white guy. I have no rhythm, so I couldn't tell.
And I just think it's cool in a sense that, like, because, like, many cultures use music and rhythm as part of a way of passing on these techniques. And we're going to get into some of these arts that really use rhythm and music, you know, outside of capoeira. You know, a lot of people know that capoeira uses music and chant and singing as part of its practice. And a lot of people think that that's the only art that does. But, you know, many Asian arts in Japan and in Korea and the Philippines and, you know, everywhere use music. And I just think it's so cool how the traditions get passed on through the music, which passes on more of the culture. I think it's great to pass it on to the younger generation that way. Here, let's go to Nigerian Dambe boxing. Oh my gosh. When I saw this video, I thought, holy crap, gladiators do exist. Now, Dambe boxing, also known as Kokawa, I'm probably saying it wrong. So if there's anyone out there that's familiar with Dambe boxing, please call us, because I know nothing about this and neither does Sibu Bob, but this is great. But it's also known as Kokawa, and it's a form of boxing associated with the Hausa people of West Africa. Historically, Dambe included a wrestling aspect known as Kokawa, but today it is essentially a striking art. Now, in this video, a British gentleman he wasn't necessarily interviewing. Well, I guess he was. He was doing a documentary about this style of boxing. And what they do is they make a cage for one fist, not both fists, just for one fist, they make a cage out of rope, and they cover their fist in it, kind of like, you know, like the old Muay Boran and Muay Thai players and stuff like that, right?
They didn't dip it in glue and glass, though, did they?
They did, and they had to outlaw it. Yeah, they had to outlaw it, and in these matches, the idea was to knock someone down. And it didn't matter if they went down and they were knocked out or if they just went down. The idea is you're supposed to knock your opponent down. But you've got, you know, these ropes, and it shows this, you know, really burly dude wrapping his fist in rope, and you're thinking, holy crap, I wouldn't want to get hit with that guy's bare fist, much less have it be covered in rope.
Right.
But the idea behind the rope is to make the strikes, quote unquote, more effective. And it provides a little bit of protection, not much, but it, you know, provides a little bit of protection. And it does. It makes the strikes pretty effective. And the guy doing the story did say that they used to dip it in glues or resins and then dip it in glass or shards of sharp rock or whatever. And they had to outlaw that part. But the dambe is still being done. And these guys in the video were pounding on each other. They were, like, looking for their range and looking for their opening and pounding on each other. And I know that these hits would knock out pretty much anybody. And they'd get hit and then just square up and look at their opponent again and just go, okay, let's go. And you're thinking, holy crap, why aren't these guys in regular boxing? You know what I mean? Why aren't these guys right. knocking people out professionally? But the thing is, though, is that from what I hear, they are trying to make this sport a little more mainstream. And to make it like a professional type of thing as opposed to something that's done, you know, during festivals or, you know, during a dambe party, so to speak, right? Because all of these matches are done, like, in the dirt, out in the open, you know? And a lot of times the guys that are fighting, they're doing it for money. They're trying to find, like, a benefactor, you know, or a sponsor, so to speak, that will pay them to fight, you know. Of course, there's betting going on and stuff like that. And in the video, you'll see, you know, one of the wealthy people literally throw money at one of the fighters and just walk away. And, you know, if someone throws, you know, that much money, which is the equivalent of maybe like 3 months as a laborer or whatever, enough money to buy food for your family for, like, you know, 3 to 6 months, you know, you're kind of obligated to fight for that person, and that person being right. your benefactor, right? So, you know, it's interesting, and one gentleman said, you know, I'm doing this for money. I have to take care of my family, and he's the burly guy, like, all, you know, built like a brick house, man, just burly and ready to knock people out. But it's an interesting video. It is. I mean, it looks brutal. You know, people wrapping their hands up in rope and knocking the crap out of each other. But, you know, just like Muay Thai, you know, a lot of people do it for the money. You know, you got to do something to feed your family if you can't get a job. It's, you know, it's sad in some respects, but it's also really cool to watch, to know that there's, you know, this style of boxing that's still being practiced today as it was generations ago. It's really incredible. Oh, okay, where should we go next? Anybody on the chat board? I want to see if there's anyone on the chat board. No, it looks like it's just us today, bro.
Just us.
Come on,
okay,
folks.
That's fine.
Come on, folks.
We know in. That some people are going to be on their smartphones or whatever, and those we can't see. But call in, share with us, let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, even if you practice a style of karate that has – you know, a form that you know that has a form that's not very well known or practiced or whatever, you know, give us a call. Me and Bob, we love to learn about anything and everything. You know, we are like sponges when it comes to this stuff. We love it. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys. Okay. Now, one of my favorites comes from India, Kalari Payat. And it's a well-practiced art in the Kerala region of India, and it's considered one of the oldest fighting systems in existence. Now, of course, you know, there's probably going to be people that'll be like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Well, you know, that call in, you know, tell us why it's not. But it's considered, it says one of the oldest fighting systems, not the oldest fighting system. Call in if you want to, you know, really, you know, rant and rave about, you know, Greek and Roman martial arts. Okay, but anyway, it's practiced in the Kerala region, in continuous parts of Tamil Nadu, and among the Malayali community of Malaysia. Wow. Okay, so not far from India. Okay. It was originally practiced in northern and central parts of Kerala and the Tulu Nadu region of Karnataka. Now, Kalari Payat, I don't even know how to explain it, because it's one of the coolest, most physical systems I had ever watched. And just on the very little research that I had done years ago, like back in the, you know, mid-1980s, when I first heard about Kalari Payat, number one, I was like, whoa, this exists. And number two, I was so amazed at the athleticism of these athletes, the leaping and the ability to use like all sorts of weapons, swords, spear, shields, staves, the whole nine yards. And one of these weapons, I kid you not, I call it the whip sword, because basically, if you imagine, basically it's a strip of steel with a handle. It's razor sharp. It's a strip of steel. But if you imagine it being thin enough and having the consistency or the substance of like maybe X-ray film, like a sturdy piece of X-ray film, you've got this thing that you can literally curl up and put in a pocket and unroll to have this 5-foot blade on the end of a handle. Right? And it goes around shields. You hit a shield, it goes around shields. It's unpredictable. You know, I've seen videos where the practitioner, if they're skilled enough to actually double it, you know, while in use, they're actually pinning the end of the blade to the handle. Now you've got this, like, bobby pin-shaped weapon that's sharp on both sides. Right? And you can scoop with it, you can flail with it, and then let it out. Now you've got like a 5 to 6 foot blade. It's like incredible. And it makes this cool ching ching noise when they hit things. Oh my gosh. I don't know the name of the weapon. I'll have to look it up. But I know I saw a video of this whip sword, and I was like amazed at the use of the sword. I didn't know what to think. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. But the athleticism, like I said, is incredible. If I remember correctly, a lot of the movements are based on animals, and you'll find a lot of it's very low crouching movements are very reminiscent of animal type of play. So really cool stuff. So, you know, if you've never heard of Kalari Payat, folks, check it out. Look it up. It's spelled K-A-L-A-R-I-P-A-Y-A-T-T-U. And it's also known as Kalari Kalai. So, yeah, check it out. From India, in the Kerala areas of India. Really cool stuff. Now, in a lot of the videos, you'll see a lot of weaponry, but they do have empty hand and kicking methods too. So very cool. And the kicking methods look a lot like any other martial art. Very, very cool stuff. All right. So that's that. Okay. Now, next one I want to get into as far as a lesser known art. is something called Yalyan. And it's a Filipino style of kickboxing, and it's also known as Sayaw ng Kamatayan, and it loosely translates into the dance of death. Yeah, death is a good word for it. Kamatayan, it kind of means like not death, but it kind of means like to be killed or something like that. to strike and be killed. But it's a Filipino style of kickboxing, and it was developed by Master Napoleon Fernandez. And since its inception in the 1970s, it has dominated the kickboxing scene in the Philippines and has proven very effective against other stand-up fighting arts. Now, I had heard, have you heard about Yalyan? I've rarely heard of it. I first heard about it in the early 1990s. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I've never heard of it. My only form was Panan Tukan.
Yeah. And Yalyan, I remember reading about it in like Black Belt magazine or Inside Kung Fu or Inside Karate. I forget. It was one of those magazines. Yalyan is actually kind of like a contraction word or what's the other word? Acronym for Sayaw ng Kamatayan. So it takes the Yao part of Sayaw and the Yan part of Kamatayan and put it together for Yalyan. Which is what I think is pretty cool. I don't really know much about Yalyan at all, other than it is a style of kickboxing. But I am curious as to what makes it so popular in the Philippines. Well, other than being a strictly Filipino-developed system, right? You know, outside
right.
of, you know, American kickboxing or Muay Thai. And what makes it different enough from, let's say, regular kickboxing to be that effective against other stand-up fighting arts. So I'm really curious about that. So if there's anyone out there that practices Yalyan, do call us because we would love to have you on the show. You know, now that we're talking about all of these rare martial arts, you know, I'm hoping in the future we can get some representatives from these rare arts to come talk with us so that way these arts aren't so rare anymore.
Right, yeah.
You know?
That'd be great. That'd be so awesome to get these guys on here.
Yeah, it would be great because, you know, it's like, you know, when we talk about rare, you know, the thing that saddens me is that if it's not passed on, it's going to be lost. You know, I mean, and I can't speak about how sad that is more because, you know, I'm still looking for people that practice my great-grandfather's style. You know, I'm sure that the two only masters that were left are dead now. And that saddens me. Pascualo Valles and Pedro Apilado, they were the last two people that practiced the true Toledo style of Eskrima from my dad's side of the family. And I know that I think it was Pedro Apilado that taught Guru Dan. And I tried to get a hold of Guru Dan to ask him about it. You know, I'll even fly down there, you know, and pay like out the yahoo to learn this because otherwise it's going to be lost. Right. And, you
right.
know, that's why, you know, this kind of subject really, you know, really, kind of hits a nerve. Like it doesn't annoy me, but it's a personal thing for me to hear about these rare arts and stuff. So, but anyway, yeah, it'd be great to get representatives from these arts. Okay. Next one, which is getting a little bit more popular, but it's still an art that a lot of people have not heard of, and that's lua. It's an ancient Hawaiian martial art, and its full name is Kapu Kuia Lua, or just lua. No wonder people just call it lua, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's a reason for that.
And it's a great art that's based on bone breaking, throws, pressure points, joint locks, strikes, you know, various ancient weapons, battlefield strategy, open ocean warfare, as well as the usage of firearms as introduced to the Hawaiian Islands by the Europeans. So, you know, from this description, you know, it appears that Lua is teaching you the art as it was practiced before the Europeans came. And how cool is that? Now, this Kapu Ku'ialua, or just Ku'ialua, it technically means, it technically means, quote-unquote, two hits. And that name, Ku'ialua, was subsequently given to the god of this martial art. So this martial art has a god. This is pretty cool. God Ku'ialua, pretty cool. Now, it used to be that those associated with nobility, also known as ali'i in the Hawaiian Islands, and nobility meaning like professional warriors, guardsmen, royal families, the royal court, and stuff like that, they were the only ones that were taught lua at that time. However, during times of warfare, just like with any other country, the maka'aina, the commoners, were also instructed in the basic movements of the martial arts, so that way they could go and help fight alongside the professional fighters and stuff like that. One of the cool things about the Kapu Ku'ialua is that the warriors from back then would coat themselves with coconut oil and shave off all their body hair in order to be able to slip away and avoid being grappled. How cool is that?
That's very inventive.
It is. And there's a word for lua masters. Now, you know, in Hawaii, there's a term called kumu, which is normally applied to teachers of pretty much anything, right? But for lua masters, though, the word olohe is used, and it literally means hairless because of the coconut oil and shaving off all the body hair type of thing. Mm. So pretty cool. Now, this art, lua, almost went extinct, until King Kamehameha established three official lua schools called Pa Ku'ialua, and it helped prevent its total extinction. Because, you know, after the Europeans came and after, you know, the missionaries converted people and stuff like that, a lot of the old ways started to go by the wayside, kind of like how it did in the Philippines when the Spaniards came.
Right.
Yeah. One of these three lua schools was instructed by a teacher named Hahakea, another named Namakaimi, and one taught by Napua Uki and his assistants. Now, this last one, taught by Napua Uki, was one of the most prominent and taught 24 boys. Taught 24 boys of King Kamehameha's court. Wow, I guess that is a prominent one. Huh. So,
yeah.
Anyway, now the specifics of lua, let's see here. Let me find it. Here we go. Style specifics. Now, there is a modern form of this art because, you know, times change. And, you know, lua has been adjusted to suit the 21st century. However, the traditional spirit of the art remains intact. And if you're going to be in Hawaii and you're going to study Hawaiian martial art, you know that the traditional spirit or the concept of mana, as well as family, ohana, is practiced a lot over there. Weapons used by the natives may have been focused on primarily in the art at one time, as it is said that the fighter who loses his weapon should then resort to the hand-to-hand stylings of lua. Training methods include spear catching, training in the surf, the focus of mana or life force, kind of like chi or ki, and other exercises that are used to focus this mana in methods that are very similar to qigong. Now, some of the weapons in Lua, we've got the hoi, which is the canoe paddle, and then there's the hoi leo mano, which is the shark tooth paddle. And I think there was a shark tooth paddle at the Martial Arts History Museum when you took me there the first time. And I went,
yes,
holy shit, look at that. In fact, I think that's what I said. Holy shit, look at that. I've never seen a real hoi before. Then there's the ihe, which is a short spear with barbed edges or a straight point. And these can go up to 9 feet long. And then you've got the ka'ane, which is a garrote. So they practiced strangling methods as well. They've also got staves, both long and short. You've got the, and they're called ko'oko'o. And you've got the ko'oko'o loa, which is the short, or the regular 6-foot staff. And then you got the ko'oko'o pokore, which is the 4-foot staff. So that's pretty cool. So kind of like Bo and Joe. The knuckle dusters, they've got a knuckle duster, and I will say this wrong, so I'm hoping Sifu and Giabat is listening, because I'm going to say all of this wrong. If there's anyone that can help me pronounce anything in the Hawaiian language, it's a Hawaiian hula dancer. Kuekue Lima Leomano. I think I said that right. Kuekue Lima Leomano. It's a knuckle duster. And then you've got Leomano, which is a shark tooth weapon, which I guess is like a knuckle duster just with teeth on it, I guess. Then there's the Then there's the ma'a, which is a sling. Makapahoa, which is a double-edged dagger. Neva, a short club. Pahi, knife. Pahoa, a single-edged dagger, and pahoa ko'oko'o, which is a cane double-edged dagger. That didn't make sense. I don't know what that, maybe it's supposed to be like a cane, or maybe a dagger inside a cane. I don't know. But a lot of very indigenous island-type weapons. I mean, that shark tooth paddle that, you know, I saw at the, you know, if you've never seen these shark tooth paddles, listeners, These will crack your head wide open. Wide open and just completely pummel your brain right out of your head. It's like just crazy. So anyway, that was Lua. A lot of information about Lua, because that was the most information I could find on that particular martial art. So very cool, and thank you to the Hawaiian Islands for proliferating this art. Okay, let's get to the funny ones, okay, in a way. Yatuan. Yatuan is duck kung fu. Duck. Quack, quack, quack. Duck. Now, what would you
say? You sounded
long?
Like a penguin from Batman.
Yeah, I think that... Okay, now, if someone came up to you and said, I practice duck kung fu, what would you picture in your head? Just out of curiosity, what would you picture in your head?
Pecking.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Maybe some bobbing and weaving, almost like boxing with the hands in a beak, closed in a beak fashion.
Mm-hmm. Cool, and you are correct.
I thought you're guys. I'm for sure you're saying you're wrong too.
And you are the weakest link. You're wrong. No, you're right. Actually, I mean, there's other stuff as well, but everything that you pretty much said is in Yatuan. I've only seen a live performance of Yatuan once in the late 1980s, and I thought it was like the coolest yet weirdest thing I'd ever seen. ever. And it's considered an internal style, believe it or not. And as of nowadays, there's only two people that have mastered this. So if this doesn't get passed on, it's going to die with these two people who are already in their 90s, right? Because they were already like in their 80s when in the late 90s. So there must be like almost 100 by now, you know? I mean, come on, right? Now, a lot of young people refuse to learn this style because it looks weird to them. And so instead they go to like, you know, other traditional styles of Kung Fu or modern Wushu. And they just completely pass over Yatuan because it just looks weird. So short brief history about Yatuan or Duck Kung Fu. It's said to have originated in the Tang Dynasty by Taoist master Liu Ya from Ume Mountain, who raised ducks. And during that time, it's said that he was inspired to create the style while raising ducks. Now, a Yatuan fighter does waddling kind of footwork instead of walking, and that's what makes it look kind of weird. But this footwork is meant to conceal devastating kicks and sweep kicks. Hand techniques include pecking, chops, punches, and flaps that can be applied as defensive techniques similar to the styles of crane fist. Let's see what else. Movements in Yatuan are all in pairs and are symmetrical in left side and right side. The forms are long, graceful, fluid, and are actually really cool to watch. They've been described as very beautiful to watch. And Yatuan is practiced in the provinces of Tianjin, Jilin, and Tangshan. Although this style is very rare to find outside of China, it's said that it's a very effective fighting style. During the end of the Qing Dynasty, most of the proficient fighters in Yatuan and professional bodyguards from northern China were all experts in duck kung fu. Pretty wild.
Yeah, and
by the way, there are two kinds of duck style. One is the imitative duck style, and then the other is called Raobu Chuan, which is kind of like circle step, also known as the Mandarin Duck Fist. And it looks a lot like Kung Fu Long Fist, known in Wushu as Chang Chuan, but with its own specific flavor based on the duck movements. So pretty cool, Yatuan. And there is a video to that of an old master doing duck Kung Fu. And that'll be posted up on our page as well. Now, I kind of want to address this because, you know, I kind of have to laugh sometimes. You know, when I was researching this last night, I came across an article in the Livestrong website online, and it's titled "Rare Fighting Styles," right? And I'm going to actually post the link, too, so everyone else can laugh at it. Now, these are rare fighting styles. And it says, and this comes straight from livestrong.com, originally posted last month, as a matter of fact, February 7th, 2014. It says, with the blending and altering of old fighting styles into new techniques, the list of fighting styles is incredibly long. But most modern fighting techniques have their origins in more traditional fighting arts practiced hundreds of years. While all the fighting styles make use of the hands in combat, each focuses on different aspects of strength and execution. Here are some of the rare fighting styles. Number one, Eskrima.
Really?
Number two, Tang Sudo.
No kidding.
Number three, Capoeira. Number four, Bagua Zhang. And number five, Bakme Kung Fu. So now, other than Bakme, I really don't find Bagua Zhang, Capoeira, Eskrima, and Tang Sudo to be considered very rare. Do you?
I'm sorry, say that again? You broke up.
I said, other than Bakmei, I myself don't consider capoeira, escrima, and tang sudo to be considered very rare. Do you?
No, because almost every taekwondo school, a lot of taekwondo schools teach tang sudo.
Yeah.
And they blend it. Escrima, oh my God, really? Rare?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go
no,
figure.
No, not at all.
Go figure. And, you know, I don't
capoeira,
know if it's because...
I would consider capoeira a little rare because it's not widely taught.
Yeah, it's
even
not
widely
taught. Even
though we know of it, we've seen it.
Yeah, it's not as... Yeah, there isn't like a capoeira school in every street corner like, you know, taekwondo or anything like that. But, yeah, you know, I would consider it like rare in that sense. Bakmei, you don't hear much of it, although it is widely practiced. But I think, you know, I think what it is that we are martial artists and we hear these terms day in and day out. And I think, you know, tang sudo, escrima, you know, especially escrima, kali, you know, silat. We hear all of these terms like every day, and we know people that are masters in them and stuff. So it's not rare to us. But I wonder if it is rare to, you know, the general public that knows nothing about martial arts who have only heard of taekwondo and karate. So maybe that's what this article is geared toward. But I really had to laugh at it because it was getting toward the end of the night, and I went, ooh, another article on rare fighting styles. Tang Sudo? Escrima? What?
Right.
What? What's going on there? So I really had to laugh at that. Now, this is going to be the last one because we do only have 15 minutes. I really didn't think we were going to be able to get through all these. I thought we were going to be done early. But this one was my favorite out of the rare martial arts styles. And I got this, I researched this through the Matador Network. And it's called Tatib. And the article says, disciplined training is all well and good, but sometimes you just want to grab a stick and beat the living hell out of your opponent. That's the basic idea behind Tatib, a form mostly practiced in the northern regions of Egypt. The full name of the art is Fan el Nazaha wal Tatib, which roughly translates to the art of uprightness and honesty through the use of a stick. Depictions of Tatib gestures have been found in tombs dating back to the second millennium BC, while ancient Egyptians used it as both a dance form and a way of training for the military. In Tatib's traditional form, one person strikes at the opponent's head while the opponent defends, switching roles after each turn. Now, while it may lack in grace or subtlety, Tatib makes up for entertainment value as well, as it is often practiced to bass drum and pipe music. At times, Tatib is a performance, but the severity and seriousness of the head strikes often escalate as the action does in the dance. So really cool. There is a video attached to this article, which all of these arts will be posted on our page after we go off the air tonight. But it's kind of funny, this the full name of Fan el Nazaha wal Tatib, which translates to the art of uprightness and honesty through the stick. You know, one of my escrima classmates and escrima sisters, guru Amy Kerniger, she commented on my post because I had to post it last night because I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And she joked that she quoted it. She goes, "The art of uprightness and honesty through the stick. I'll make you honest with my stick." She put that cool comment on there. And then I wrote as a joke, "Stick to your hand? It hurt, didn't it? Now be honest." So I guess if you want to be upright and honest, practice Tatib. So it was actually really cool. You know, I saw several videos of two men dancing the performance aspect of it. And, you know, it was done to really cool drum and pipe music and very good choreography. It looked very simple, but, you know, you kind of have to look at it, you know, as a martial artist. You have to kind of look at their footwork, you know, what could it be hiding? You know, how they, you know, change places with each other. You know, what is that teaching as far as fighting strategy? And, you know, that's why I love any martial art that is taught through dance and through music. It's pretty cool stuff. Whew. Well, that's it for some of the lesser known styles.
Wow. So, okay, next week, I've just been confirming, that's why I've been typing a lot. We are going to have a grandmaster in ninjutsu on next week. Master Dan Harmon has agreed to do our show next week.
Right on.
So I'll look up some stuff on him this week and get it over to you. But he's excited. He's in mountain time, so he's only going to be an hour ahead of us. So that'll be. I'm looking forward to that.
Very cool. Very cool. Yay. Now, is this title Grandmaster? Shihan Soke, Master. I don't want to look like an idiot next week.
I'm a grandmaster in ninjutsu. It looks like he studied under, he asked us if we ever interviewed Frank Dukes.
No, but we'd love to.
Well, we tried. He was actually slated to do our first show, and he was going to Europe.
Mm-hmm. It would be great if we could get him on. I would love him on. I would love them both on.
that will be really cool. I'm sure Frank's just been busy, you know. Just out of the country doing other things and that sort of thing.
I mean, he's so busy that I can't even track him down, and he lives near me, for gosh sakes, you know. It's like he's never in Seattle, so it's hard to get a hold of him. Because I would have to go through, you know, his managers and stuff like that. He's a hard person to get a hold of, but he's busy. But one of these days, we'd love to have Shidoshi Dukes on, and we're looking forward to having. I'm just gonna call him Hanshi Dan Harmon for now, for lack of a better term, because I don't know what his title is yet. I guess we'll figure that out next week. So yay! So join us next week, everybody, as we're joined by Hanshi Dan Harmon. And and again, if anyone has any other rare martial arts, just go ahead and type it in the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show, because we love learning about that stuff. Just absolutely love it. So anyway, unless you have any other closing comments, we're just going to go ahead and close out the show there, Sifu Bob.
Very cool. I had fun. It was an interesting show.
Yeah, it was. You know, I'm kind of bummed out that people weren't listening. But at least here in Seattle, it turned out that the evening turned out to be clear. The sun came out and stuff like that. So if I were everybody else, I probably would have gone out.
Well, yeah, but in Seattle, give it 5 minutes. That's going to change.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, we'll see everybody next week, and our special guest is Hanshi Dan Harmon. See everybody next time, everybody. Good night now.
Take care. Good night.